Chapter 12. With a laugh, aren't you all the better pleased to be told you've behaved as well as she? Oh, you know, I've not done it for you, he tossed back at her, without the least note of hostility in the affected lightness of his tone. Haven't you, though, perhaps the least bit? Because, after all, you knew I understood? You've been awfully kind about pretending to. She laughed. You don't believe me? You must remember I had your grandmother to consider. Yes. And my father and Effie, I suppose, and the outraged shades of Giver. He paused, as if to lay more stress on the boyish sneer. Do you likewise include the late Monsieur de Chantel? His stepmother did not appear to resent the thrust. She went on, in the same tone of affectionate persuasion, yes. I must have seemed to you too subject to Giver. Perhaps I have been. But you know that was not my real object in asking you to wait, to say nothing to your grandmother before her return. He considered. Our real object, of course, was to gain time. Yes, but for whom? Why not for you? For me? He flushed up quickly. You don't mean, she laid her hand on his arm, and looked gravely into his handsome eyes. I mean that when your grandmother gets back from Ouchy I shall speak to her, you'll speak to her. Yes, if only you'll promise to give me time for her to send for Adelaide Painter? Oh, she'll undoubtedly send for Adelaide Painter. The illusion touched a spring of mirth in both their minds, and they exchanged a laughing look. Only you must promise not to rush things. You must give me time to prepare Adelaide to, Mrs. Leith went on. Prepare her to? He drew away for a better look at her. Prepare her for what? Why, to prepare your grandmother. For your marriage. Yes, that's what I mean. I'm going to see you through, you know, his feint of indifference broke down, and he caught her hand. Oh, you dear divine thing. I didn't dream, I know you didn't. She dropped her gaze, and began to walk on slowly. Can't say you've convinced me of the wisdom of the step. Only I seem to see that other things matter more, and that not missing things matters most. Perhaps I've changed or you're not changing has convinced me. I'm certain now that you won't budge. And that was really all I ever cared about. Oh, as to not budging I told you so months ago. You might have been sure of that. And how can you be any surer today than yesterday? I don't know. I suppose one learns something every day, not at Giver, he laughed, and shot a half-ironic look at her. But you haven't really been at Giver lately, not for months. Don't you suppose I've noticed that, my dear? She echoed his laugh, to merge it in an undenying sigh. Poor Giver. Poor empty Giver. With so many rooms full, and yet not a soul in it except of course my grandmother, who is its soul. They had reached the gateway of the court, and stood looking with a common accord at the long soft-hued facade on which the autumn light was dying. Tea looks so made to be happy, and she murmured. Yesterday. He pressed her arm a little. You darling, to have given it that look for me. He paused, and then went on in a lower voice, don't you feel we owe it to the poor old place, to do what we can to give it that look? You too, I mean? Come, let's make it grin from wing to wing. I've such a mad desire to say outrageous things to it, haven't you? After all, in old times there must have been living people here. Loosening her arm from his, she continued to gaze up at the house front, which seemed, in the plaintive decline of light, to send her back the mute appeal of something doomed. It is beautiful, she said. A beautiful memory. Quite perfect to take out and turn over when I'm grinding at the law in New York, and here he broke off and looked at her with a questioning smile. Come. Tell me. You and I don't have to say things. To talk to each other. When you turn suddenly absent-minded and mysterious, I always feel like saying, come back. All is discovered. She returned his smile. You know as much as I know. I promise you that. He wavered, as if for the first time uncertain how far he might go. Don't know Darrow as much as you know him, he presently risked. She frowned a little. Who said just now we didn't need to say things? Was I speaking? I thought it was your eyes. He caught her by both elbows and spun her halfway round, so that the late sun shed a betraying gleam on her face. They're such awfully conversational eyes. Don't you suppose they told me long ago? Why, it's just today you've made up your mind that people have got to live their own lives, even at Giver? Zai, this is the South Terrace, Anna said. Hold, you like to walk down to the river? She seemed to listen to herself speaking from a far-off airy height, and yet to be wholly gathered into the circle of consciousness which drew its glowing ring about herself and Darrow. To the aerial listener her words sounded flat and colorless, but to the self within the ring each one beat with a separate heart. It was the day after Darrow's arrival, and he had come down early, drawn by the sweetness of the light on the lawns and gardens below his window. Anna had heard the echo of his step on the stairs, his paws in the stone-flagged hall, his voice as he asked a servant where to find her. She was at the end of the house, in the brown-paneled sitting room which she frequented at that season, because it caught the sunlight first, and kept it longest. She stood near the window, in the pale band of brightness, arranging some salmon-pink geraniums in a shallow porcelain bowl. Every sensation of touch and sight was thrice alive in her. The gray-green fur of the geranium leaves caressed her fingers, and the sunlight wavering across the irregular surface of the old parquet floor made it seem as bright and shifting as the brown bed of a stream. Darrow stood framed in the doorway of the farthest drawing room, a light gray figure against the black and white flagging of the hall. Then he began to move toward her down the empty pale-paneled vista, crossing one after another the long reflections which a projecting cabinet or screen cast here and there upon the shining floors. As he drew nearer, his figure was suddenly displaced by that of her husband, whom, from the same point, as he had so often seen advancing down the same perspective. Straight, spare, erect, looking to right and left with quick precise turns of the head, and stopping now and then to straighten a chair or alter the position of a vase, Fraser Leith used to march toward her through the double file of furniture like a general reviewing a regiment drawn up for his inspection. At a certain point, midway across the second room, he always stopped before the mantelpiece of pinkish-yellow marble, and looked at himself in the tall garlanded glass that surmounted it. She could not remember that he had ever found anything to straighten or alter in his own studied attire, but as he had never known him to omit the inspection when he passed that particular mirror. When it was over, he continued more briskly on his way, and the resulting expression of satisfaction was still on his face when he entered the oak sitting room to greet his wife. The spectral projection of this little daily scene hung but for a moment before Anna, but in that moment as he had time to fling a wondering glance across the distance between her past and present. Then the footsteps of the present came close, and as he had to drop the geraniums to give her hand to Darrow. Yes, let us walk down to the river. They had neither of them, as yet, found much to say to each other. Darrow had arrived late on the previous afternoon, and during the evening they had had between them Owen Leith and their own thoughts. Now they were alone for the first time, and the fact was enough in itself. Yet Anna was intensely aware that as soon as they began to talk more intimately they would feel that they knew each other less well. They passed out onto the terrace and down the steps to the gravel walk below. The delicate frosting of dew gave the grass a bluish shimmer, and the sunlight, sliding in emerald streaks along the tree boles, gathered itself in two great luminous blurs at the end of the wood walks, and hung above the fields a watery glory like the ring about an autumn moon. It's good to be here, Darrow said. They took a turn to the left and stopped for a moment to look back at the long pink house front, plainer, friendlier, less adorned than on the side toward the court. So prolonged yet delicate had been the friction of time upon its bricks, that certain expanses at the bloom and texture of old red velvet, and the patches of gold lichen spreading over them looked like the last traces of a dim embroidery. The dome of the chapel, with its gilded cross, rose above one wing, and the other ended in a conical pigeon house, above which the birds were flying, lustrous and slaty, their breasts merged in the blue of the roof, when they dropped down on it. And this is where you've been all these years. They turned away, and began to walk down a long tunnel of yellowing trees. Benches with mossy feet stood against the mossy edges of the path, and at its farther end it widened into a circle about a basin rimmed with stone, in which the opaque water strewn with leaves looked like a slab of gold-flecked agate. The path, growing narrower, wound on circuitously through the woods, between slender serried trunks twined with ivy. Patches of blue appeared above them through the dwindling leaves, and presently the trees drew back, and showed the open fields along the river. They walked on across the fields to the towpath. In a curve of the wall some steps led up to a crumbling pavilion with openings choked with ivy. Anna and Darrow seated themselves on the bench projecting from the inner wall of the pavilion, and looked across the river at the slopes divided in two blocks of green and fawn color, and at the chalk-tinted village lifting its squat church tower and gray roofs against the precisely drawn lines of the landscape. Anna sat silent, so intensely aware of Darrow's nearness, that there was no surprise in the touch he laid on her hand. They looked at each other, and he smiled and said, "Colin, there are to be no more obstacles now." Obstacles? The word startled her. Had obstacles? Don't you remember the wording of the telegram that turned me back last May? Unforeseen obstacle. That was it. What was the earth-shaking problem, by the way? Finding a governess for Effie, wasn't it? But I gave you my reason. The reason why it was an obstacle. I wrote you fully about it. Yes, I know you did. He lifted her hand and kissed it. How far off it all seems, and how little it all matters today. She looked at him quickly. Oh, you feel that? I suppose I'm different. I want to draw all those wasted months into today, to make them a part of it. But they are, to me. You reach back and take everything back to the first days of all. She frowned a little, as if struggling with an inarticulate perplexity. "'Tis curious how, in those first days too, something that I didn't understand came between us. Oh, in those days we neither of us understood, did we? It's part of what's called the bliss of being young. Yes, I thought that too. Thought it, I mean, in looking back. But it couldn't, even then, have been as true of you as of me. And now, he said, the only thing that matters is that we're sitting here together. He dismissed the rest with a lightness that might have seemed conclusive evidence of her power over him. But she took no pride in such triumphs. It seemed to her that she wanted his allegiance and his adoration, not so much for herself as for their mutual love, and that entreating. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.